Well, we are in 2 Kings chapter 5 this morning in the story of Naaman as we continue with our series of God and water, different stories that involve water in the Old and New Testaments. We are up to lesson number 9, and if it seems like we just studied this story, we did. Some of you may not have been in class, and some of you may not have been here, but not too many months ago when we were studying through our other series of lessons on the Gentiles, the different Gentiles in the Old Testament, Naaman was one of those lessons. When I was studying it this week, I was thinking, it just seems like we studied this recently. And I think, oh, I think we did. But anyway, we'll study it again. It's the lesson designed, and I'm sure we can always learn more, and some were not here, and I'm sure we won't say exactly the same things again, but it's a great story, it's a powerful story, and again, it is another story that involves water in the Old Testament. And so we've been studying God and water as we came through the history of different studies. We talked about two different lessons, I think it was, from the time of the judges. If you count the time of Joshua, the very beginning of the period of the judges, we talked about the story of Joshua and the entrance into the land. We talked about the story from the days of Gideon, who was one of the judges. And then in the period of the United Kingdom of Saul, David, and Solomon, we didn't have any studies during that period. I guess they didn't have any water during that time, but no stories from that time. And then in the period of the divided kingdom, and that's where we still are. We had the story from Ahab and the challenge of Elijah against the prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel. And the lesson last week, Jehoram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, who went up against the king of Moab, and they dug the trenches, and the Moabites thought that they were was blood that they were seeing, and they've slaughtered each other, and they approached, and of course Israel won. Israel and Judah combined in their armies, along with the Edomite king, won a great, great victory. And so today, another lesson from the period of the divided kingdom. No longer Elijah, but Elisha. Now the prophet Elisha is the one that we're looking at in our lesson today. He is involved in this lesson. Someone has said that the chapter, the first part of the chapter, not counting the very last story that involved the servant of Elisha, Gehazi, but the first 19 verses can be divided into three parts. Naaman's condition, three C's to help our memory. Naaman's condition, Naaman's cleansing, and Naaman's conversion. His condition, his cleansing, and his conversion. So I would like three readers, and let's read it. In case you didn't know where we were and haven't studied it, let's have three readers. We'll read those 19 verses, Naaman's condition, verses 1 through 7. Who would like to volunteer to read verses 1 through 7? Any volunteers? Okay, Lana. And Naaman's cleansing, 8 through 14. Sylvia, would you like to take that one? And Naaman's conversion, verses 15 through 19. Any other? Casey. Not Stacy, but Casey. Okay. It's going to be a long day, I can tell. Okay, go ahead, and we'll just read those 1, 2, 3 without stopping.
Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his Lord, saying, thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have herewith sent my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. And at what, do I read 8?
Nope, that's good. Sylvia, 8 through, what did we say, 8 through 14.
When Elijah the man of God heard that the king of Israel was torn and had torn his robes, he sent him this message, why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So the man went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elijah's house. Elijah sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hands over this spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Parafar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he went and turned off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you have not done it? How much more than when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself into the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean, like that of a young boy.
And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him. And he said, indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, therefore, please take a gift from your servant. But he said, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So Naaman said, then if not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth, for your servant will no longer offer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. Yet in this thing may the Lord pardon your servant, for my master goes into the temple of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow down in the temple of Rimmon. When I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord please pardon your servant in this thing. Then he said to him, go in peace. So he departed from him a short distance.
Okay, very good. And so a great story concerning Naaman from this Old Testament chapter. Again, well, there's several important points and several interesting observations as we think about Naaman. Let's just walk through the questions and let that kind of guide our discussion and any questions that might come up. Question number one, list below all the characteristics of Naaman as stated in 2 Kings 5 and verse 1. What is said about this man? He's a man of valor. Man of valor. What else?
Great man and high favor of the king.
Great man and high favor of the king. He was a leper. Several positive things obviously said about him. And then, but it ends with, but he was a leper. Okay. Anything else?
Highly respected.
Generally, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves too much, but generally as we see this story and we see the reaction of the young maiden to him in the next question and all of that, what kind of impression do we have of Naaman generally?
He must be a good man.
He must have been a man of good character. I think generally we can see that he seemed to be a man of good character. Certainly, as we have said, it says that he was the captain of the host of the king of Syria. Now, I for some reason, had in my mind for a number of years when I was younger that he was just a captain. We think an army has many captains, and he was a captain, and he was a man of valor. But it doesn't appear that he was just a captain. It appears that he was the captain. That he was the king's right-hand man. He was the Secretary of Navy, we would say. A Secretary of the Army or the Marines or whatever they have today. The man that is in charge of the forces. He is captain, not a captain, but captain of the host of the king of Syria. And so he was a man of very high standing, very high power to the king of Syria. And it says he was a great man with his master. Who's his master? The king. He's a great man with the king. He is well thought of with the king. He's a powerful man, as we say in this country, and honorable. My version says honorable. Some versions say highly respected, highly regarded. Sometimes individuals are high in power, but not highly regarded. We know of people like that in government. Oh, they've attained to a certain level of power, but they're not highly regarded. Their character is not much. They're not well respected. They don't have a good personality. They rub people the wrong way. They don't know how to get along with people. A lot of different things we could say, but this man doesn't appear to be that. And so he was a man of power. He was the host of the king of Syria. He was appreciated by his master, the king. He was honorable because by him, what had God done by him?
They'd won many battles.
This is a really interesting statement to me. By him, what were you going to say, Gloria?
Well, I would just say two battles, deliverance.
Yeah, it says by him, who?
The Lord.
Jehovah, the God of Israel. This is the God of Israel. This is the name of the God of Israel. It's not that his God, Ramon, had not given him victory over the Israelites. It says Jehovah had given victory unto Syria because of him. Well, that's interesting. God had given victory. God had blessed Syria in this case. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. We know from the context of the other chapters here in the book that Syria had kind of had their way with Israel for some time. And we'll see on in the next question how Naaman's wife's maid had come because of some of these raids that the Syrians had made upon Israel. And so God has blessed this man. And maybe for his own purposes and his own reasons, I think. There's God's providence is involved in this in some way. Maybe to teach us a lesson. Maybe to teach others a lesson. And so he is honorable. He has been given victory by Jehovah for the Syrians. He was a mighty man of valor. A mighty man of valor. He wasn't afraid of war, was he? He was a powerful man, but here's the big but. What's the big but?
Leper.
He's a leper. So everybody's got a little eczema or something once in a while. Is that what this is?
No.
This is serious stuff, isn't it? Leprosy in ancient times was incurable. And it could be very deforming. And if left unchecked, which is not much you could do with it, My wife asked an interesting question about this. Remember your question? What was your question? Would you like to share with the class?
Well, I just commented that maybe other nations did not regard leprosy. God had warned his people that if someone had leprosy, that they could not be around others, so they would not be infected. Mm-hmm. It does not appear that he's being kept away from other people.
No, he's still on the job, isn't he?
Right.
So we don't know how far advanced his leprosy had developed at this point. But he was a leper. And I didn't mean to stop you. Were you done?
No, I was just saying that apparently he's not been isolated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like in Israel.
Yeah, so obviously they didn't have the same kind of laws that Israel had. I mean, Israel, God had given Israel the law mm-hmm. concerning leprosy, and what was God's law concerning leprosy?
You had to call out that you had leprosy.
Yeah, if you had leprosy, you had to call out and let people know you were approaching, didn't you?
And he was separated from others.
You were separated from others. So isolation, there would be isolation. What's the term we use for that? Quarantine. Quarantine, right?
Right.
But obviously, Syria did not have that. Some of the other nations did not have that. And so, and there was good reason for that, obviously. Why did God tell his people to isolate those who had leprosy? Well, we all know the highly contagious nature of it, right, wasn't it? So it wouldn't spread among others and to control it. Okay. Well, let's go. Question number two. Who lived in Naaman's household and waited on his wife? What can we infer about how she was treated given her desire or wish? So who was this? Pardon me, I heard several mumblings, but no clear. At least, pardon me? Okay, the girl, that maiden that was captured from Israel. And so she was in, what verse is that in? That's in verse 3. 2 and 3. And the Syrians had gone out by bands. As we said, Israel kind of, Syria kind of had their way with Israel at this time. And clearly it was God's plan involved here. And had brought away captives out of the land of Israel, a little maiden, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And so here is a maiden. And the second part of that question is, what can we infer about how she was treated? Can we infer anything about how she was treated?
Yes.
She
obviously cared for him.
She cared for him, didn't she?
That's right.
She was concerned about him. So clearly she had apparently, maybe... I was trying to think about this. That was my first reaction. My first reaction was she must have had some care and appreciation for him. It sure seems like, from what we see in verse 1 and what is stated, that he's an honorable man. He's appreciated by others. God had given him victory. That everything seems to be pointing to a man of character. A man who would have treated his help well. Who would have been appreciated by those who are working for him or working for his wife. And so a general feeling of appreciation. And so even though she's a captive and she's been carried away from home, she cares enough about this man that she's wishing what?
That he would be cured from the leprosy.
Yeah, if he could just be with the prophet in my country and my master could be cured. Now, as I was thinking about all this, I was thinking... Well, maybe he wasn't such a great guy, and she just, you know, Jesus said to love your enemies, and so maybe she just had such a pure heart within her that even though he was a jerk, she felt badly that this jerk had leprosy and wanted him to be cured.
No, I don't think
and I guess that's possible, but I think probably in the whole context that's not the case, that he is a man of character that she cares about. And so I think everything seems to point to that. Okay.
I think they cared about her because they listened to her.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. They respected her enough. And so let's go on to question number three then, to tie that together. Is why would a captain of a mighty army listen to a little slave girl? That's a curious question, an interesting question. Why would...
Why would she, why would they, here's someone that you capture from another country, a slave girl, maybe not much education or anything else, and yet she just kind of wistfully says, you know, well, I wish the my master could be in Mexico, where they have these special doctors in Mexico that can cure cancer.
But this is a
and what would we think?
Yeah. Like
what would we think if someone says, well, I wish you could, you know, I came from Mexico, and now I'm up here working as a servant in your household, and I wish you could come down to Mexico because they have these special doctors that can cure cancer. What would we say?
Okay.
Well, yeah, right. I'm going to go run off to Mexico, to some place that doesn't have as good of health as we have in this country, and there's going to be some guy to perform a miracle on me and cure my cancer? No, I'm not running. I'm not going there. So why would this slave girl, when she says, oh, I wish he could be in my country, and we've got this man that can cure leprosy. Cure leprosy? Nobody can cure leprosy.
It's been offered him one way of hope that he didn't have.
Yeah.
He didn't have any hope.
Hundreds of years after the Israelites left Egypt, all the nations around them were aware of how they left and how God brought them out. So Jehovah's name is respected among Israel's neighbors.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that's right. Ron?
And also the way that, you know, she waited on his wife, and the wife has a lot of influence.
Yeah, wife has a lot of influence. And I think that's where it comes from. I think it starts with the wife. But I think it's more than just a wistful comment by the slave girl. In that, going back to what Brother Darrell said, had the message about Israel circulated now for many years, and now it's been some years now, we've gone from the, you know, from the conquest through the period of the judges, and now into the period of the united and divided kingdom. So some time has passed here. But do you think that those stories of Israel's conquest and Israel's power and Israel's God and walking through on dry land, and all the things that Israel had done and God had done for them in defeating their enemies, had those stories been completely forgotten?
No.
I think probably not. Some time has passed, but those are still there. And do you think that there might be some other stories that this young girl could have told? Did she just make this wistful comment, or do you think maybe she knew some other things about Elisha that she could share with this woman?
She might have been telling stuff.
I mean, you just look back at the stories that are recorded.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back at the stories that are recorded here about Elisha, of course, there was just the story just previously about the trenches of water. We just studied it last week. Might some of them have heard about the trenches of water and God's victory over the Moabites? And do you think the story about the youths who were mocking Elisha and he sent out the cubs to destroy him, do you think that story may have circulated among the people? Or what about the Shunammite son being raised from the dead? Or what about the poisonous porridge that Elisha healed? Now, Elisha has performed several miracles that we see, and probably many, many others. Many, many others that were not recorded. And so, my guess, and it's just a guess, is that she just doesn't make one wistful comment about her master wanting to. She's probably been talking to her mistress and saying, you know, our prophet does great things. This prophet does great things. He did this, and he did this, and he did this. And so the evidence in the mind of the wife may be mounting, and she's saying, this is worth a chance. This is worth it. This is worth taking a trip. And so, as Ron says, she's probably convincing her husband. He may have had doubts in the beginning, but maybe it's worth a trip.
In the Bible, it said that the king liked him because through him, the Lord gave him a victory.
Yeah.
So he already, and I use this, you know, he had a taste of what the Lord could do. And then when she told him, go talk to this prophet and see what he can do for you. So did it all tie together?
Yeah, it may well. I think that's a good point. That's a good, very good point. Okay. So he decides to take her up on that. And And my other thought about that was there may have been some desperation in here too. That it's partly because of what she says, but there could be. Do people, when they have a deadly disease, sometimes do desperate things? Sometimes do people spend money going down to Mexico for a chance of getting their cancer cured when the doctors here can't do anything? Sure, they do. Why?
Hope.
Hope. That's some level of hope or some just grasping us. We're in a serious situation here, and I've got to do something. I mean, if I'm gone, no one's going to spend my money anyway. I might as well spend it on traveling down there and getting on a plane and going and seeing what they can do instead of just leaving it for the kids that are going to waste it anyway, you know. So I might as well take my money and go and try. And so desperation causes us to... So maybe a little bit of that involved too. Question number four. Note the reaction of the king of Israel to the news that Naaman was coming to be cured. How does the king's faith compare to that of the little slave girl, and how do you explain this? And so he comes and he leaves and he departs, and it says, the king of Syria, verse 5, said, "Go now, I will send you to the king of Israel." Why did he send him to the king? I thought she had told him about this prophet.
She had. I don't know why they
went. Why did they go to the king? Okay. Yeah, maybe out of respect, saying, "I'm coming here," and but they come to the king. Well, before I say anything, what were some of y'all's thoughts about that, Joan?
For one thing, I mean, he's the commander of the army of Syria.
Yeah.
He can't just show up in another country, without saying, "Oh, whoa, what's going on here?"
Okay. Yeah, we don't know how large the assemblage was that traveled with him, the entourage that traveled with him, but you would think that out of respect to the king, he would show up there first, being a mighty general. Becky?
Well, it says he thinks he's trying to pick a fight with him. Mm-hmm. He says, "Here he's asking me to heal this man of leprosy, which he knows I can't do." You know, so he's thinking the king of Syria is picking a fight.
Well, in verse 6 in particular says, the letter said, "I have sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." So, you know, my first thought is that the young maiden is saying there's a prophet. But by the time it goes through the wife and to Naaman and to the king, you know, it's like the telephone game or whatever, a little bit of miscommunication, a little bit. And the king may be thinking, well, who's the most powerful man? The king knows he's the most powerful man in his country. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks, who's the most powerful man in that country? Well, it's the king. I'll send him to the king. It must be the king that can heal him, because the king's the most powerful. Yep. So for whatever reason, he sends him to the king. And, of course, we see the king's reaction, which was what?
Tore his clothes, which is sadness.
Yeah, he tore his garments. Question number 5 says, the Bible says the king tore his clothes. What does this mean? What's the rending of the garments symbolic of? Carol?
Anxiety and grief.
We see several examples of the rending of garments in the Old Testament. Reuben in Genesis chapter 37. Reuben, when he returned and found that Joseph had been taken from the pit and his brothers had sold him, what did he do? He tore his garments. The sons of Jacob in Genesis 44, when they found out that the cup, Joseph's cup, was in Benjamin's sack, they rent their garments. When the messenger came to Eli, telling the news that the ark of God had been stolen, taken by the Philistines, and his sons were dead, what did he do? He rent his garments. David rent his garments when he heard that Absalom had slain his brothers. And the list goes on and on. So these are all cases of showing the reaction of rending the garments at a time of great sadness or sorrow or even indignation and anger about something. In Matthew 26, the high priest rent his garments when Jesus was before him thinking that he had blasphemed, or at least he was pretending to think he blasphemed. But whatever the case is, so the king rends his garments, saying, "Why is he? Am I God? Why is he sending him to me? Am I God? He's trying to pick a fight with me."
Maybe the other king was just thinking, "Well, I'm going to have to write this letter to you because you got the authority."
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Maybe. Something
maybe.
Like that.
Maybe. Maybe he thought that if it wasn't the king would know who it was.
Yeah, and by his authority, you know what I mean?
Maybe. So now that's part of that. What's the difference between the maiden and the king? Ron?
The maiden had faith that the king did not.
Yeah, you would think that the king, even if he doesn't like Elisha or whatever, you would think the king, instead of rending his garments and being in indignation about this and upset about this, you would think the king would say what? No, I'm not the guy. You know, someone comes and knocks on your door and I'm not Mr. Jones. He lives next door. You're looking for the wrong person. You would think the king would say, you know, I'm not the person. It's very nice of you to come and show me respect, etc. But we have a prophet that can handle this. But I can't. I'm not God. I can't handle this. But, you know, he doesn't react that way. He just reacts in a, you know, crazy way. When he should have had the same faith, if he had the faith of the young maiden, he would have said, we've got a guy that does that. You know, I know a guy. Isn't that what we say? No, I don't do tile, but I know a guy. I don't do plumbing, but I know a guy. I don't do miracles, but I know a guy.
But the maiden girl knew who Elisha was.
Yeah. Yeah. Could he have been that ignorant?
Well, you think the king thought he got it put on the spot?
Yeah.
You know, what are you sending to me for? I can't do anything.
Yeah, I know. You'd think it had the presence of mind, though, to remember the prophet. You would think he knew the prophet. Maybe he was totally ignorant of the prophet. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he was. That's hard to believe. Okay, question number 6. What instructions did Elisha give to Naaman as a cure for the leprosy? This is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my whole life. I mean, who ever heard of a cure like this? So what was the instructions? Don, what was the instructions?
Wash 7 times.
Yeah, go dip in the Jordan River, the old muddy, ugly Jordan River. Who would ever want to go dip in dirty water? Go over here and dip in, you know, there's that holding pond at the end of your neighborhood. And it's always muddy and dirty and yucky, and who knows what's crawling around in there. You just go over there and dip 7 times, you know. So what is Naaman's reaction? Yeah. Question number 7. What was Naaman's reaction to Elisha's instructions? What alternative cure would he have preferred? So someone already said he was angry. He was angry. But what does he say?
First of all, he was insulted that Elisha didn't even come talk to him.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's a very good point. What, when he first came up, what happened?
I'm an important man.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we said he's a man of character, and I think he is a man of character, and I think as the story goes on, we'll see that character coming out. But at this point, and all of us have flaws, and you can't, here's a man who is second in Syria. Basically in power. Mm-hmm. Second in power to the king. At least the king may have had a number of advisors, one over the economy and one over this and one over that. But in the army, he's over the host. And so on the military side, he's number 2 under the king. And he's a powerful man. And he goes up to the king, and the king says, well, we left him at the king's doorstep when the king was rending his garments. How did we get from there to coming to Naaman, to Elisha's home?
Elisha said, send him to me. He sent a message and said, send him to me.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was so verse 8 that the men of God heard. How did he hear? How did Elisha hear about this? We don't know. We don't know. He may have heard it because he was a prophet of God. He may have heard because of some conversations or the story being told. We're not told. We know that God's prophet, in another place, the king was talking about something, and someone said, well, how did he find out? How did Elisha find out? Everything that's said in the king's bedroom, I mean, his advisors told him, everything that's said in the king's bedroom, Elisha hears, because he's a prophet of God. So Elisha may have been hearing it just because he was a prophet of God. We don't know how it came to him. But when he hears, when he learns, what does Elisha say? Yeah, why do you rend your garments? Send him to me that he may know what? This is good. That he may know there's a prophet in Israel. There's a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came, verse 9, with his horses and with his chariots and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And so as Daryl was saying, here he comes in all his pomp and circumstance. And he comes with his horses, and he comes with his chariots. And what's he expecting? He's expecting a warm welcome. I mean, if you are the number two man to the king of Syria, and you come for a visit, you expect a warm welcome. You expect a lot of pomp and circumstance. Or you expect at least someone to come out and welcome you warmly and say, welcome. You, Mr. Important Man, thank you for coming to visit me. What does Elisha do? He didn't even leave the house. He didn't even leave the house. The President of the United States comes to see you, and you send out the butler and say, thank you for coming. The Secretary of State comes to visit you. What happens when our Secretary of State goes to Canada or goes to Israel or goes to... Well, they roll out the red carpet. He's number two. You know, and we're glad to see him. And Elisha didn't roll out the red carpet. So I think Daryl's right. He may have been insulted that he didn't even come out. He didn't come out to see him. He sent out his servant.
Prideful. A little pride there.
A little pride. Yeah. Yeah. A little pride. Pride's getting in the way here. And so he says, Elisha sends a messenger unto him saying, go and wash in the Jordan seven times, and the flesh shall come again unto thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth. And he went away and said, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of Jehovah his God and wave his hand over the place and recover the leper. And so he thought that God was going to come do some great thing for him, or that the prophet would come out and make a big to-do and make a big ceremony and wave his hand over it. And so he had in his mind, is there a lesson here for us? He had in his mind what he wanted to happen. He wanted his way. He had it in his mind, and when it wasn't his way, he was disappointed and he was angry. And so he offers a substitute. He thinks his way is better. And why can't I just substitute here? I mean, or not? The Abana and the far rivers of Damascus better than the waters of Israel? They probably were. They probably were. They were probably cleaner and prettier and more picturesque. And he could have gone there and he could have got the official king's photographers out and everybody would have taken pictures and it would have been on the internet tomorrow morning. You know, and it would have been a big to-do. Facebook would have had so much fun with this. Right? And he turned away and he went in a rage. And so, how did he come to his senses?
One of his servants came to him.
One of his servants came near. And what did the servant say?
If he had told you to do some great thing, he would have done it. So why did you do this?
Yeah.
There's a point to be proved.
What's that?
You know, God said, I want you to go down to the river and do this and you'll be cured. Yeah. But we didn't see that.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just wave your hand?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so, you mean I got to do something?
Yeah.
And you mean I got to do it God's way, the way he told me to?
Yes.
What's that called?
Pride.
When we do, that's pride when we buck against it. But what is it called when we just simply listen to what God says and do it?
Obedient
faith.
Faith.
It's just, that's just faith. It may not make any sense to us. And there's, of course, a lot of great lessons here. And I think this goes, look over at Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4. And Jesus is talking about the stubbornness of the people. Jesus had come to his own hometown of Nazareth. And he said in verse 21, "Today is the scripture fulfilled in your eyes." And all bear witness and wondered at the words of grace which proceeded out of his mouth. And they said, is this not Joseph's son? And he said to them, "Doubtless ye will say unto me this parable, Physician, heal thyself. Whatsoever we have heard at Capernaum, do also here in thy own country." And he said, "Verily I say to you, no prophet is acceptable in his own country. But of a truth, I say to you, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up for 3 years and 6 months, and there came a great famine over the land, and there was none of them that Elijah was sent to, but only Zarephath in the land of Sidon, a woman that was a widow. And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet. None of them were cleansed, but only Naaman the Syrian." What's his point? How does Jesus use Naaman here and the widow of Zarephath? What's the point? What's the point? What did the widow of Zarephath and Naaman have in common? They did it, but there's something else they had in common. What else they have in common? Jesus says, weren't there not widows in Israel? Weren't there not lepers in Israel? What's the point he's making? The people in Israel didn't have enough faith.
And these are non-Israelites.
These are both Gentiles. The widow of Zarephath is a Gentile, and Naaman is a Gentile. There would be Gentile people who had faith before Israelite people would. And they're saying, I know what you're thinking. He speaks in the synagogue, and they're not wanting to listen. He knows their hearts. And he says, undoubtedly, the thing is fulfilled about you. You're thinking, physician, heal thyself. I mean, you have a bad attitude. You're not believers. And in the days of Elijah and the days of Elisha, God sent his prophet to help someone that wasn't even an Israelite to be a lesson to that and every generation. I think it ties back to the story of Naaman and God giving Naaman victory over the Israelites, and the whole setup, the whole circumstance, I believe, was for the purpose of bringing about this miracle, to bringing a lesson not only for them, but for people of all generations about the faith of this man who shouldn't have had faith. The widow at Zarephath who maybe shouldn't have had faith, at least compared to the people of Israel. But here's the people of Israel, their own people, who because of their lack of faith, not only don't believe in Elisha and Elijah like they should, but they've turned away from God. And because of their turning away from God, he's allowed the Syrians to punish them. Their wickedness, their idolatry, in all the different ways. But we still didn't get through all of it, even though we've been through it before. Is that the second bell?
Yes.
Great lessons from Naaman. Of course, Naaman was healed, and the rest of the story is that he comes back, and he wants some earth. He wants to give Elisha gifts. Elisha refused the gifts, but he takes some dirt back with him. Apparently, the dirt was a symbol to him. He wanted to be able to build an altar on dirt from Israel and worship Jehovah God. And he even asked Elisha to forgive him, for his God to forgive him. When I go back and I have to stand with my master in the temple, forgive me. But basically, It was seems to be that his heart was turned to Jehovah God. We're out of time. Sorry, but that's the great end of the story.